Put your right hand up and say, aye.
Aye.
Left hand, say, feel.
Feel.
Both hands down and say, great.
Great.
Now we're going to do it three times, and the object is that everybody on this BYU campus hears this noise and they want to know what's going on in there. Ready?
I feel great. I feel great.
You can go now. My wife and I, Mary Craig, Corrigan, we were in Vermont, and we happened to drive by Abraham Lincoln's summer place called Hildene. And the reason I asked you to join me in that little cheer is Abraham Lincoln was famous for saying a lot of things. But one of them was, people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. Who's in control of your happiness? You are. Now, MDRT was just mentioned here. You don't have to be a member of MDRT. But let me tell you why it helped me. The difference between people who are highly successful and people who are just getting by is really small. And the difference is how you get to become a little bit better. Just a little bit better. Do you think you could become incrementally a little bit better? That's all it takes. Now, I'll tell you something. My friend Mary McBride, who's in heaven now, used to say to me, become adept at adapting. Become adaptable. I remember one of my best friends, guy who really helped me a lot, and you'll see it over the next couple of days. I graduated from Zener University. Anybody else ever hear of Zener University? Let's hear it for Zener!
Yeah.
Well, Zener was out with one of our great agents who had prepared 197 slides to present to this big company, and he's clicking along after about six or eight slides. Things are really going well. And the president of the company says, well, what do you think we ought to do? And he keeps going six or eight more slides, and Zener's going, cut, cut. Finally, Zener pulls the plug out of the wall. And my good friend is like, what happened? He says, I've got 180 more slides to show him. He said, didn't you hear what he said? He wants to know how to buy. How many times in life do we prepare something and something comes along that's really significant, a watershed event, and we avoid it and keep right on going? What I prepared this morning I thought was pretty good stuff. But I will tell you something. I heard on this stage just a few minutes ago one of the greatest things that can happen in life. A human being who rose up against all odds and did a little bit better. In fact, he did more than a little bit better, didn't he? Huh? Yeah. Do you think that we could do a little bit better? Man, after listening to him, if I can't do a little bit better, I'd eat my hat. I wear a hat, you see. It's to hide all of this shine. So you know what? Instead of talking about what I was going to talk about, I'm going to talk about what I heard here just for a minute. I have three things I want to do. Two of them I planned on. One of them I didn't. And it's about this fellow we just heard. Because you know what? I think he got his strength from more than just what he said. Because I believe God has a plan for every single person that he created and breathed life into. And I think that when you discover what that is, you have power beyond anything you can imagine. And I think we saw in this human being unbelievable power, don't you? I mean, he was beyond himself. He was extraordinary. Just amazing to me what I heard this person say. And his son, our children, my goodness, could we do a better job for our children? Do we really realize how really, really important we are to them? I remember Jim Valvano, who died of cancer, gave a talk at the Million Dollar Roundtable about cutting down the nets, and he said, the reason I did as well as I did, the reason I did extraordinary, is because my father believed in me. Man, that resonated with me. It was so powerful. The influence we have over our children. And to think about his son that he was able to connect with to be the best prison dad he could be. What an incredible thing to witness. Well, anyway, Jim Valvano said, you know, today, before you go to bed tonight, why don't you call each one of your kids on the phone and tell them how much you love them? Why don't you make sure that they know that you believe in them? Because you know what? The problem with America and every country and with every human being is most of us don't really believe in ourselves as much as we should. We think the other guy's greater than he is and that we're less. And the truth of the matter is, they're not greater. They might look greater and act greater, but they're not greater. They got to shave in the morning and jump in the shower just like all the rest of us. The fact is, it's God that gives us the strength and the power. My good friend Guy Baker, I'll tell you how I met him. 35, 40 years ago, I'm in Boston. Roger Zehner, who I happen to love. Roger is the funniest guy in the world, and he never told a joke. An unbelievable funny guy. Calls me up one day, says, Corrigan, I want to come down to McMinnville. I'm Corrigan from Oregon, but it's McMinnville, Oregon, right? Calls me up and he says, I want to come down to McMinnville and let's go out and make some calls together. And then I found out what he really wanted. He says, I want to go to that Mexican restaurant. You know the one with the guacamole sauce? I mean, the guy did it all the time. Anyway, Zehner... Where was I? I lost my place here. What were we talking about, honey? Huh? God. I'm in Boston. Oh, but before I went to Boston, I get this phone call. Zehner calls me on the phone and he says, Corrigan, he says, you're going to Boston to the round table and I want you to sit down and have lunch with a friend of mine. He wants to interview you. And I'm going, that sounds pretty good. Hey, what's his name? He says, his name is John Elsie. He's from Garden City, Kansas. Well, anyway, I get to Boston, and I sit down to have lunch with John Elsie. He hauls out a 29-page questionnaire and a tape recorder. I didn't even know they had tape recorders in those days. And he interviews me. I find out he's interviewed most everybody in the round table at one time or another, Ruan. The guy has a warehouse full of tapes of people he's interviewed. I mean, and there he is right there, John B. Elsie, Garden City, Kansas. Stand up, John. John loves the Lord, by the way. John says to me, hey, you want to go to a prayer breakfast? I said, a prayer breakfast at the round table? He says, it's not a sanctioned event, but we have a prayer breakfast. And I said, yeah, I'd love to go. So I go to the prayer breakfast, go in this room, there's about 300-400 people there. It was wonderful. And the MC was Guy Baker, who will be president of the roundtable in a couple of years. I went up and I said, Guy, that was great. I really enjoyed that. And he says, well, if you think that was so good, why don't you come to the Bible study? I said, I didn't know you had a Bible study. He says, it's not a sanctioned deal. You know, you got to say these things, got to have a disclaimer. But he said, we meet for a couple of days every year and have a Bible study and then a prayer breakfast. That's how I met Guy Baker. That was the first time. Well, Guy Baker is an incredible teacher. And, you know, he's the one that came up with this incremental thing. How many of you pay attention to baseball? Any guys in this room? How about an average? If a guy hit 300, would that be good? Now, in a 160-game season, if you went to bat 3.5 times a game and you got one base hit every other game, you'd average 140. That would be your batting average. Do you know if you got one more hit every 10 times at bat, you'd raise your batting average to 240? One hit. Do you know if you got one hit in 8 at bats, 2 games, it would go up to 270? Or if you got one more hit in 6 at bats, it would go up to 300. The difference between 140 batting average and 300 is really small. So what Guy believed and what guys in the round table do, they get together and study. They share ideas. They're not smart guys, except that they do some smart things. And when you start going to the round table, the reason you keep going is because every year in 2 or 3 days you get more ideas. Incidentally, if we were to turn this light off, what's it take to make a light work? Electricity, energy, right? What does it take to get a human being to work, to energize it, to get electricity in it? It's ideas. When you get ideas, powerful ideas. Every year, and I'm not picking on John, but I love this guy. Every year he comes up, he's got more sayings and more stuff, you know, it's wonderful. But for years he said to me, you know, Corrigan, we drink from wells we did not dig. You know, and I never really paid a whole lot of attention to that the first 10 years. But eventually, about the 11th year when he said that, I said, John, what are you talking about here? And he says, we drink from wells we did not dig. Now think about that for a minute. I don't know if I'll have time to show you this picture, but I found a well that a guy dug, took most of his life doing it, and he wasn't really sure he'd finish digging the well before he died. But that well, people had been drinking from in his village, his loved ones, his friends, for 500 years. 500 years. Well, I had a client that I happened to sell a substantial amount of life insurance to, and he funded an islet with term insurance. And I couldn't get him to convert it. But he was nice enough to see me because I had come up with some good ideas for him once in a while. So I called him up one day, and I said, I'd like to have lunch with you. And I set up a lunch with him. We went out to lunch, and he said, okay, what have you got for me today? And I said, well... Anyway, we were having lunch, and I said, I want to ask you a question. And I said, is it possible that you and I drink from wells we did not dig? And he says, what do you mean? And I said, well, anybody ever do anything for you that had to be done years ahead of time in order for you to enjoy it? And he started talking about his father and what his father had done. And I said, well, what if we were to build and construct a well for the people you love and care about? What would that well look like? He sat back and put his hands, chin in his hands like that. What does that mean when you do that? Boy, when an agent gets somebody to do that, are we in good shape? You see, selling is not telling. It's listening. You got to get people to tell you what's in their heart of hearts. And so he says to me, I'd like $1 million for each of my 3 kids. He'd already told me about his kids, and I'd like $2 million for my wife. And this $5 million that we'd had of term insurance in the islet for years and years and years, we finally are able to convert this to permanent insurance. And why? Simple concept, simple question. You see, what you learn at the round table is good questions to ask people. Then you got to have stories to tell them. And the story is, what? We drink from wells we did not dig. It's an easy, great way to talk to people about a product called life insurance. It's very simple, and it's very easy. Well, Guy Baker, as you know, was in an auto accident. And he was driving to Sedona, and his wife had just had breakfast at, and they were on their way to a wedding, and a car pulled out on the highway without looking. They might have been on a cell phone, and so a truck and trailer swerved to avoid the car, crowded Guy and his wife off the road. At the very time they were trying to pass, going at a high speed, they went down over a hill, flipped 3 times, and they were hanging upside down in the car. How they survived it, I'll never know. How there were no broken bones or any blood. In my opinion, God saved them. There's just no doubt in my mind about it. But a pretty harrowing situation. And so, in talking with my wife about it, first thing out of her mouth was, you never know. And I just want to talk to you about this a little bit. Somebody that you're calling on right now, somebody that you might call on soon, somebody that you did call on that didn't make a decision that they should have made. The problem is they're gonna one of those people is gonna go around a corner, and you never know what's gonna happen. Just let me tell you what's happened this year. My attorney, 35 years, his wife is 53. diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in March. Very active woman. Unbelievable, all the stuff she does. Healthy as she could be. We had her funeral in July. I have seven sons. My number four son, about a year ago, called me on the phone. And he said, Dad, I seem to be losing my hearing. Now, he has this little boy who screams so loud he'll break a window in the next block. And so we're thinking it must be Dylan that's doing it. And so he goes to the ear doctor, and the doctor says, you know, it could be. But it gets worse and worse, so finally he has some testing, discovers he's got a brain tumor. He's got a tumor in his inner ear. Fortunately, it's not malignant. But in the process of the gamma knife, he loses 100% hearing in one ear, 30% in the other. So he's a project manager. He has to get together with 20, 30 people at a time. He can't hear them. And even with all the devices, it's all scrambled. He had to quit his job, if you can imagine this. Fortunately, his good friend, who is a neurosurgeon specializing in inner ear tumors in West Virginia, has offered him a job to run his neurological medical clinic. If that isn't God at work, I'll eat my hat. But who would ever expect that? You know, my wife, very healthy person, had a melanoma all of a sudden show up on her knee or on her leg. I can't begin to tell you. I have a young, my number six son's a partner in a local CPA firm in Portland. His managing partner's son charged across the finish line at the Ironman in Hawaii. You know what it's like to do the Ironman? I mean, they run, I don't know how far, swim, I don't know how far, bike, I don't know how far, a whole lot further than I've been thinking about running a marathon. Anybody here think about doing that? You know, and that's all I'm going to do is think about it. But he charged across the finish line 6 weeks ago. Most people fall across the finish line in Ironman. Guess what? Just a couple weeks ago, he got a headache, and he asked his girlfriend to take him to the hospital because he was sick and dizzy. He had a seizure right there in the hospital. They had to air flight him to our medical school, took off half his skull because his brain, he had a hemorrhage, and he'd had a stroke, 33 years old. Now, can you imagine? He was in diapers for a week, knew nothing. They had to induce a coma to keep him alive. He's now talking to his mother. He's recovering. It's unbelievable. It's another instance in my mind of God's mercy. But the fact is, somebody out there 33 years old that you know is going to run into this kind of stuff. We have had more things like this happen. And you know, people think that they can do their own financial planning, tap, tap, tap on the internet and figure out what to do. That's a lie. They need people like you and me to help them. They need people like you and me to do something so that they can make decisions. And you know, the funny thing is, I'm going to show you a simple concept. I'm a concept salesman. Let me tell you a story. You know, we need to learn to be story sellers. And I want to show you why. But here's a little story for you. I think this thing will help me do this. How would you like to be remembered? This is a story. I sold group medical insurance to a small business owner. He's got two employees. He's a genius, however, in franchising. His company grew really rapidly over a 10-year period. Now he's got 500 employees doing $110 million in annual sales. As the company grew, the level human resource department and the president's office, there were so many layers between those two that I didn't see him much as the years went by. And one day I walked in for the employee benefit renewal, and the chief financial officer walked in and he says, "Hey Dan, did you get your bid on the $10 million of Key Man Life Insurance we're going to buy?" Well, I hadn't even heard about it. He says, "You better call the president." So I called him and went through three or four levels of management to get a 15-minute appointment. I walked up to the office. His secretary ushered me into the office. He's got this huge office. Half of it's got this saltwater aquarium, half the room with couches and all this kind of stuff. The other half is this desk, small aircraft carrier. You know? Anyway, I walk in. He's real nice. He stands up, smiles, shaking my hand, ushers me to the guest chair. I sit down. He sits down. He says, "How's your family? How's your business?" I ask him the same thing. We finally get down to the moment of truth, and he says, "You're here about the Key Man Life Insurance, right?" Now, I'd noticed while I was sitting there, keen eye we life insurance guys have, he had a stack of proposals this high on the end of the aircraft carrier. And at the very key moment, he looks over at me, and he says, "Dan, we've got probably proposals from 50, 60 agents around the Portland area." And he looks at me and smiles, and this is what he says to me. "What can you possibly tell me that I haven't already heard from all these guys?" Now, what kind of a question is that? It's a question to tell me several things. Number one, don't waste my time. Number two, you better come up with something really good because I've heard it all. I mean, what am I going to do here? What do you do when you get in trouble? And I said to him, "There's probably nothing I can tell you that you haven't already heard. But if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a question." He says, "What's that?" And this was the question. "How would you like to be remembered?" He says, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, if you're taken out of the picture, the people you love and care about, how's it going to work? What's the plan?" Guess what he did? Sat back, put his hand on his chin. What's that kind of signal is that? Going to talk, right? Going to talk. And this is what it was. Here he is. He leads his company. He's looking to the future, leading his company, leading his family. Everything is dependent upon him. What happens if he's taken out of the picture? What's the plan? Do you know that most people die in a mess? In fact, almost everybody dies in a mess. Nobody's really prepared to die. And think about it in your own case. If your spouse is on the phone and gets a call, and the person on the other end of the line says, "I'm sorry, but your spouse will not be home tonight. In fact, your spouse will never be home again." What would happen if your spouse got that call today? Would that be a little bit of a mess at your house? Are there a few feathers around? Are there any problems you might have? And think about your clients who really don't know what to do. What happens when they're taken out of the picture? Anyway, this is what I said to him. What would happen if you're taken out of the picture? Around the next corner, maybe something that will be irreversible in your life, like an auto accident or a stroke or getting cancer or something like that. It's a simple concept. Well, let me tell you a story. I asked him, "Is it possible that you and I drank from wells we did not dig? How would you like to be remembered?" This is an interesting thing. When you get people to talk to you, if they really tell you what's in their heart of hearts, what you find out is the words reveal what the heart conceals. You're not going to find out what's going on in their heart of hearts unless you get them really to talk to you. And when they do, you're going to find out what their life is really all about. You see, we shouldn't be in the business of selling product. We ought to be in the business of helping people figure out what their life's about, then line their assets up so that they can lead the life that they were intended to lead. That's what impressed me so much about the speaker we had this morning. It's a simple concept. Let me tell you a story. Now, why do you think we should learn about storytelling? Incidentally, have you ever gone to a meeting and somebody gets up and says, "Before we have our meeting today, I'd like to tell you a story"? Does that kind of make you sit back and say, "Man, I'm going to listen"? Like, you know, what was the story he was telling about the two guys down in Australia? How many of you wrote down that story? I mean, did you want to really open your ears when he said that? I mean, I don't know why, but when somebody tells me they're going to tell a story, I just turn into a happier person almost. What are you going to tell me? You know, what happened? Well, I learned about this. I can't think of the fella's name that wrote this book, but what they talked about is the way our brain works. The left side of our brain is analytical: math, science, diagnosis, problems, planning, detailing, controlling. And the right side of the brain is visualizing, imagining, intuition, conceptualizing, teaching and communicating ideas, and understanding service. Now, the interesting thing is, if you talk to people about math and science and ledger statements and facts and figures, the left brain is at work, and the right brain can go to sleep if it wants to. But you know what happens if you talk to people about their hopes and dreams? The right side of the brain, the left side has to help the right side of the brain figure out what's going on, and both sides of the brain work together. Isn't that interesting? And so here's what you find out. When I started the business, I was a generic presenter. Ledger statements, facts, figures, benefits. My company's bigger than your company. My company's got a better rating than your company. My company has a better rate of return. Nobody cares. Uncertainty and skepticism and ambivalence come from facts and figures, and it leads to a lack of trust, insecurity, undercurrents, and buyer's remorse. That's a great deal. Even though I sold it, my buyers got buyer's remorse. Anybody identify with this? But look what happens if you become a story-selling presenter. What if you talk about values and concepts and your experiences, and it creates enlightenment and security and a good gut feeling about what's happening? This leads to a high level of trust and calm decision-making. So which one should you lead with? I mean, eventually we got to talk about facts and figures, don't we? But where should you start? Generic or story selling? You know, when you go to the round table, you hear all kinds of stories, get all kinds of ideas. You come to this meeting. Maybe the smartest thing you've done this year is to come to a meeting like this. If you get one great idea here, what's it really worth to you? And not just to you. You're going to tell that story to dozens, maybe hundreds of people. What do you think they're going to do? It multiplies. It's good for everybody. Simple concept. Moral high ground. What are the critical variables in order for your clients to reach their family goals? What's the word critical mean? I mean, if I called you up and said somebody that you love's on the critical list, would you really listen up? I mean, we're talking serious here, aren't we? So what do we mean when we say what are the critical variables in order for your clients and friends and family members to reach their family goals? What's really critical? In other words, you can't do without it, right? And the answer is, A, you. Somebody's got to sit down with people and spend the time and talk to them and ask them great questions like, what's your plan if you're taken out of the picture? You know, how important were your parents to you? If you lost a parent as a young person, how often would you think about your departed parent? Or how often would you think about your parents? I don't think I, as a parent, realize how important I am to my children. I know how important my parents were to me. Do you know what I'm saying? The other is the plan. You know, I ask people about the plan. You know what they say? What plan? Or, that's why I have you here. Ha ha. Do you know 90% of the people I've called on in my life don't have any semblance of a plan at all? It's day to day, week to week, month to month. And unless somebody like you comes along and says, you know, just for a minute, let's not talk about finances. Let's just talk about your plan for your life. Can we do that? What's really important to you? What really matters? What do you really care about? What would you like to accomplish in your life? What's important to you about your children? What would you like to do to help them? You know, it's amazing, but most of the people you will call on don't have a plan. They may say they have a plan. Well, my plan is I'm going to buy a new boat. You know, or my plan is I'm going to play golf this weekend and I'm going to take my son with him. These are all good things, right? But what happens if that person who's so key to the family or to the business is taken out of the picture? Just to remind yourself of this, got a horse and a cart here. I like pictures. Pictures help me a lot. I want you to look at that horse and let's decide that the plan is the horse. The horse has the power to take you where you want to go. It has the eyes and the sight and the vision to see where it's going. The horse is the plan. Guess what the cart is? What do you think the cart is? That's where you put the life insurance policies, the wills, the trust, the mutual funds, all the stuff. Now, throughout America, I don't know if we've got 100,000 people in the financial services business or a million. What are they all talking about? They're talking about the cart. All the product. Man, we've got a great product. You ought to buy this annuity. Well, what's the annuity for? I don't know, but you ought to buy it. Don't put the cart before the horse. You know, in your community, you might be the only person there that doesn't put the cart before the horse. You may be the only person there that sits down with people and said, you know, today, instead of talking about finances, let's talk about your life for a little bit. Let's talk about what really is important to you. I mean, for example, if you're taken out of the picture, what's the plan? How does it look? Do you have any concerns? The role of a financial advisor is a problem solver. One of the things that Guy Baker was famous for is, you know, if you don't ever find a problem when you're talking to a client, guess what? No case. No problem, no case. So what good does it do to talk about solutions or products if people don't clearly know what the problem is? And if you spend your time talking about the problem, when the problem becomes great enough in the mind of your prospect, when the pain of the problem becomes greater than the pain of paying the premium, guess what people are going to do? Hello? They're going to make the right decision, but they're only going to do it with people they trust, people who took the time to figure out what their problem was. Planners, catalysts, coordinator, consultant, confidant, architect, quarterback, sounding board. Our role is to help our clients with smart decisions regarding their personal and business financial planning. Let me tell you a story. How many of you think that storytelling's an important tool? I'm hoping that while you're at this conference, that you'll ask somebody, tell me your best story, and I'll tell you mine. You know, if I give you a dollar and you give me a dollar and we leave this meeting, neither one of us would have benefited at all. But if you tell me your story, and I'd like to hear your story, and if I tell you my story, we'll both be richer. Because it's the stories that make the difference in people. It's the stories that stir our emotions. It's the stories that give us a good gut feeling that this person I'm talking to is real and they care about me and they want to do something for me. Well, this is a cross-section of most anywhere in North America. And you can see this hill, there's trees and a house and lawn, grass, and under that there's soil. And under that soil are unconfined aquifers. And that's where we dig wells. That's where the water comes from. Under that, there's confining layers of impermeable rock and whatnot. And under that are what we call confined aquifers. And from those aquifers, we have artesian wells. Some of them actually flow above the ground. Who provided that water? It's okay. The good Lord did. And we might think we're the ones that are doing it, but we truly do drink from wells we did not dig. It's God's grace that Troy Evans is able to do what he's doing. It's God's grace that you're able to do what you're doing. I thought it was the first thought that went through my mind when I was listening to Troy Evans is Jeremiah 29:11-14, where it says, God has a plan for your life, a plan to prosper you, not a plan to harm you. And if you'll seek him with all your might, with all your life, you'll find him. Man, what a great promise that is. And it strikes me that the blessings that we have are really unbelievable, that we do drink from wells. And you know, the deeper we dig into everything in life, God's out there winking at us and smiling at us. I mean, he's everywhere. And it's up to us to take those kinds of blessings to other people. You know, I think God shows his love to us in a variety of ways. And one way is through each other. His love comes through us, and we can pass it on to the next person. I really believe that we're fortunate to be in a business where we can take God's love to people and help them do the things to keep their families together, the things that do make a difference. Well, let me tell you a story. Storytelling, story selling is really helpful to people. It makes them feel down to earth and that they can communicate with you and that you're listening to them. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
She was the editor for the BYU Daily Universe. After graduation, she moved down to Arizona, where she went into the newspaper business and worked there for a few years, and then took a job up in Salt Lake with Deseret News. And in 1995, in 1997, she became the editor for the religious section of the Deseret News. Now, we didn't invite her up here to talk about that. What we have invited her to do is that she has become a volunteer in grief support at the Sharing Place. And so we've asked her to come and share the knowledge that she has about grief support with us. And, oh, I didn't tell your name, did I? That's Carrie Moore. So we'd like to have her come up. She has someone else is going to speak just before her.
I'm the pre-show. My name is Dwayne Toney. Carrie asked me to address you just a couple minutes before she speaks. She asked me to speak about my last chat with her husband, Brad Moore. I need to give you a little background first. Brad lived directly above me in our freshman dorm. We became fast friends. We later shared an apartment the year before Brad and Carrie married. Carrie worked at Marie Callender's. Brad would meet her after work, and she would usually send him away with some unsold pies on weekends. So Carrie was very popular in our apartment. When Brad and Carrie graduated, they moved to Tucson, as was mentioned, after graduation, and then after some years returned to Salt Lake. And Carrie joined the Deseret News, which was also mentioned. Upon their return, Brad and I started doing some lunches occasionally to keep up. Brad loved Asian food, and so we always went to Asian restaurants. And we often went to a place on Main Street in Salt Lake. I don't remember the name of it. The food was always good, and the service was always grumpy. And we used to joke about that. During our last lunch, Brad wanted to talk about life insurance with me. I wasn't licensed then. I had become CFP certified, and so he had a lot of questions for me. Brad was making about $120,000. He and Carrie had three young children, and he had $200,000 of life insurance. When I heard that from Brad, I said, Brad, you need a lot more insurance. And I talked about what I thought he needed and why I thought he needed it. That was my last visit with Brad. He died in a plane crash about 7 months later. When I heard about the crash, I called Carrie, and she said, Dwayne, Brad told me that if anything ever happened to me, that I should talk to you about financial matters. After I attended the funeral, Carrie and I got together and we started dealing with financial issues. Of course, I had one very big question. And the question was, did he listen to what I had told him 7 months earlier? I was very relieved to hear that he had listened. And he had purchased additional personal life insurance. And not only that, he'd bought company insurance that helped with others in his company who passed away. At this time, I'd like to introduce Carrie Moore.
was unusual to get a call from Duane, not because we don't speak on a fairly regular basis, but he usually doesn't want me to speak for him, and I don't pretend to do that. I'm speaking for myself, but he's obviously had a role, a large role in my life for the last several years, and it's something that I wanted to share with you. My husband and I, we're very close as a couple, and I think most of you can probably relate to that. Can you hear me? We talked in detail about pretty much everything except insurance. I kind of felt like that was something of a bad omen because he did a lot of traveling. In fact, I remember one of the things I said at his funeral was how much I appreciated the fact that whenever he was traveling, and he traveled to Hong Kong on a regular basis, but he would always try to find me every night by phone. And sometimes he was in fairly remote areas. But we were very close, and like I said, we talked about everything but insurance. Well, about 2 weeks before the accident, I knew there was a big roadshow trip coming up with his company. They were planning to fly in a corporate jet to several different places around the western United States, and this was in the middle of January. I told him I was uneasy about him flying during winter storms and that I was very concerned about being solely responsible for my children if something were to happen to him. He wanted to talk about the insurance coverage that he had put in place, but I told him that he didn't need to detail it for me because I trusted that he had arranged for everything. That was one of my big mistakes. I wish that we had had that conversation. He did assure me that he had done everything he felt was necessary, but I found out later that much of what he depended on came through liability policies that covered work-related accidents. How savvy he was about the details of liability policies, I will never know because we never had that discussion. What I do know is the danger of depending on liability coverage in lieu of personal life insurance, which is what several of the men who were killed in that same plane crash had done. Brad had told me many times that they were heavily covered by insurance when they flew on that corporate jet, and so I think many of his colleagues had depended on that. I won't go into details, but suffice it to say that when we finished litigation over the liability coverage that was in place, that only happened at the end of last year, more than a decade after he died. I was one of the lucky ones, as Duane explained. After his conversation with Duane, he boosted his personal life insurance. I can't outline all the ways that that decision has affected my life and the lives of my children, but I can tell you a few. First of all, and this is hugely important if you find yourself in a very vulnerable situation, we didn't have to move. Brad and I had just recently purchased a new home, and we were both working at the time, and with both of us employed, the payments were affordable. But the day he died, his paycheck stopped coming, and I knew that I was not going to be able to afford on my own to continue to make that mortgage payment. As a result of the fact that he had put that insurance I was able to pay off the house. My children were able to draw on the stability of staying within the neighborhood that they had grown to love and to continue attending the same schools with the same peers. Stability at that point in our lives was priceless to us because we not only felt extremely vulnerable after his death, but we had been through two different bouts of leukemia with my oldest son. So we were very shaky at that point in our lives. Another thing that I didn't worry about having to do was change jobs. You may or may not know, journalists are not the highest paid people in the world. But my job offered me a lot of flexibility, and that became even more critical when my husband was gone. I also needed to retain that job to keep the health insurance that I had, because I couldn't go out and get other insurance for my son. He'd been through leukemia. I wasn't going to be able to find another company that was going to touch him. So I needed to remain with my current employer, and I was able to do that. We also didn't panic when it was time to see the doctor or go to the orthodontist or take the car in for repairs or go to the emergency room, all the things that happen with young kids as they continue to grow. And I wasn't worried that somehow I would be panicking at the end of the month trying to make ends meet if I had to do something like that. We also avoided taking on additional debt in order to survive financially. My children didn't feel any pressure to drop out of school early as teenagers in order to help support the family. And I could honestly assure them that we were not poor, which to them was a major concern following his death. They were convinced that, you know, that was going to be a very, very large issue in their lives. And we were able to have honest discussions about that, and I was able to assure them that that was not the case. They were also assured that they would be able to afford higher education, something that both my husband and I had stressed to them from the time that they were very small. We were also able to continue taking periodic vacations as a family, and that was a very important part of the continuity of trying to continue life on as normally as possible in a situation where everything seems like it's turned upside down. And maybe most importantly, we were spared the pain and the daily reminders that failure to plan creates with families who feel resentful that husbands and fathers didn't care enough to help provide for future needs. This is a little bit emotional to me, not only personally, but just before I came to this forum, I spoke with a very dear friend whose father had passed away 2 days ago. She had a meeting with her mother and her siblings yesterday, and the thing that she is most troubled about is this: at this point, in addition to losing her father, is the fact that her mother had begged him to get life insurance for them, and he did not do it. In fact, he refused to do it. And she is now left to try to cover what he will not have to deal with. I can't tell you enough how important it is for providers to make sure that they take care of the future for people they leave behind. When someone dies young and unexpectedly, those who knew him tend to reevaluate their own lives. And that was the case with some very dear friends of ours. One woman in particular was concerned about their lack of insurance at that time, and she asked her husband repeatedly to add to the small life insurance plan that they had. Well, many of us feel invincible, and there are other things to do with the money, and this friend of ours believed that he was just that. He was invincible. Her pleas for additional insurance went unanswered because he was too busy, and he didn't frankly want to think about my husband's death. That seemed like an anomaly to him. About 5 years after my husband died, I got a call early one morning to meet my friend at the hospital. Her husband had stopped breathing during the night, and the paramedics were trying to revive him. Now, he was not an old man. He had recently been to the physician and had received a clean bill of health. I watched my own worst fears about the future come to life for my dear friend as her husband died on the hospital gurney. I saw the pressure of how she would survive financially, how she would pay for the hospital bill, the mortgage, and the car payments. Their only son was out of the country for an extended period of time, and their daughter was still in junior high school. She was working a part-time job that was very low-paying, did not have a college education, and lacked the skills to find a job that could replace her husband's income. She has suffered every day since, struggling to meet very basic financial demands in addition to the stress of being a single parent. While she was able to pay off the house, that took the bulk of that small insurance policy. So she has little financial cushion for anything that comes that's unexpected. She still lives in fear that she or her daughter will have some kind of a costly accident or a major medical problem, which would likely force them into bankruptcy. She is one of several women I know who have found themselves in such a situation. I learn of new ones all the time. Several of the wives who lost their husbands in the same plane crash that killed Brad have suffered in similar ways. While the details differ, their stories have an eerie similarity that haunts me still. Grief is paralyzing for a long time, but financial stress is a continuing disability that remains to hold families hostage in ways they could have avoided if life insurance had been a priority for their husbands or for the major provider in that home. Now, I don't know whether these kinds of real-life situations have any emotional impact on you. For some of you, hopefully, for most of you, they likely do. Like my good friend Duane, you may know someone personally and have felt pain along with them, or at least tried to help steer your clients around the potential for disaster with a real concern for their well-being. But I would ask you that if it's difficult for you to understand how you would feel watching your mother or your sister or your wife or your daughter face the future without the benefit of life insurance, please find a way to acquaint yourself personally with a similar situation. Nobody can tell it like somebody who has been through it. These policies don't replace houses or cars or boats. They become a literal lifeline for the families that are left behind, and that is something I believe you must be passionate about. Reasoned, competent logic and articulate advice, empathy, and compassion are not weaknesses in your business. I believe they're the keys to your success. I told Duane when he invited me to speak that I would talk about both the good and the bad that I have experienced in the years since my husband passed away. I've shared with you some of the good things that happened to my family and the pitfalls that I watched others experience when they weren't adequately insured. As a journalist, it's my job to look at things objectively, and it's through that lens that I will now share with you a couple of fairly negative experiences that I had with life insurance following the accident, not as a way to gripe about it, but simply as a way to help you, help instruct you to maybe refine your personal interaction with your clients. The day after my husband died, I called the life insurance agent that Brad and I had worked with from very early in our marriage. I knew at that point that there was more than one policy. I didn't know in detail, but I knew that there was more than one, and I knew that they were both held under the same insurance company. Before even hearing me out on the details of the situation of what I needed, he told me immediately that I didn't have the coverage I believed existed. He would not listen to me long enough to get the details or take 30 minutes to research my question. At that point, I felt fear and panic that I will never forget. I had to approach three different agents with that company before I found one who would tell me what I actually had. Once he learned of my situation, he then tried to get me to invest all the proceeds into insurance products that he was selling within 3 weeks of my husband's death. I had no experience with investments and had no way to evaluate the wisdom of what he was suggesting. He pursued me vigorously for several months before he realized I was not going to be pushed into something that I didn't understand and he couldn't adequately explain. As you already know, neither of these men were truly concerned with me or my family, and I told everyone I knew to avoid them because I had several people come to me after this accident and ask me who I would recommend to boost their life insurance coverage. At that point, Duane wasn't selling insurance, and I did not have one recommendation for them. All I could say was, good luck, I hope you find a good one. After many years of dealing with a lot of insurance challenges, I'd like to suggest a few things that I feel are worth your consideration. In addition to great customer service, which I'm sure already heard about this morning, I think you can improve your business and protect your clients more fully by working to ensure that all of their insurance needs are met. Whether or not you sell or are licensed to sell or provide a particular type of insurance. If you work with businesses and business owners, I would hope that you would be a source not only for needed life insurance, but your company also for liability coverage or disability insurance and other kinds of appropriate coverage. This was a key in my situation. When the documents are properly crafted, liability coverage can pay significant claims for the deaths of employees who often don't have any life insurance beyond their group coverage. That was the case with several of the women I knew. After an employee dies on the job, honestly, families do not care what kind of coverage they have, as long as they don't have to fight to receive the benefits that they were led to believe were available. Please use your influence to encourage liability and disability contracts written to provide a breadth of coverage that favors the employee in peril rather than skimpy coverage that favors the insurance company. My husband died believing that I and others left behind would be well covered financially if the plane crashed. That notion was fostered by at least one insurance company, which was then determined to find a way out of paying claims once the accident occurred. In those instances, I believe that the entire insurance industry suffers by association. One bright spot in this story is that I had the help of a lot of good people to assist me in working through the nightmare of losing my husband so suddenly. As someone who cared about my family even before the accident and took the pains to explain the realities to my husband, I hope that Dwayne has the satisfaction of knowing that he has helped secure the future for my family, both financially and emotionally. As you might guess, I have come to trust him, not only as a friend and a very competent accountant, but now as my financial advisor. He is genuinely interested in helping me continue to rebuild my life. And when others I know need help with insurance or investments in the future, I'm not going to hesitate to recommend him. In fact, he will get the very best recommendation I can give him. Being a private person by nature, I decided when I was asked to do this today that I would share my observations with you publicly as a way to thank him and hopefully to help inspire you to consider how you can better serve your own clients. Dwayne, like many of you, exemplifies my belief that reasoned, competent logic and articulate advice combined with empathy and compassion is not only the most humane and ethical way to treat your clients, but the most satisfying and profitable way of building your own business. Thank you.
Carrie, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. 2 points before we go to lunch. Make sure that you got your form stamped and that your name is on the bottom half and signed. And then on the back of your program, you will notice at the very back we have the sponsors, those who have helped keep our expenses down so they could be affordable for all of us that come. And also you'll notice the exhibitors. Please take time to visit with these people and see if there's products and things that we can use, since, again, they are supporting us during these activities.